Hi everyone, it's Nick. A quick note before we start. This year, May has been our target to publish our 2023 team profiles. Unfortunately, we're going to be closer to the end of the month than the beginning of the month for our release date. We are working tirelessly to update all of our 2023 information and have made many improvements that will pay off for the 2023 season and beyond. Thank you for your patience and for your support at patreon.com/CFBWinningEdge. Now on to the show.
Welcome back, everybody, at CFB Winning Edge, the podcast edition. I'm your host, Scott Bogman. Follow me on the Twitter, at Bogman Sports. I'm joined, as always, by Nicholas Ian Allen, the owner and proprietor of CFB Winning Edge. Follow him on the Twitter, at CFB Winning Edge, and Xavier Trish, at Xavier underscore Trish, T-R-I-C-H-E. Yeah, not a lot happening since the last show, right? Just the NFL draft and the transfer portal, and we've got some more rankings to do, and we're starting team previews, so... We have been busy. They call it the off season. We don't. It's never the off season. Ask Nick. He'll correct you. So it is the preseason right now. We're getting into it. We are ready to rock and roll. Nick, how was your weekend? Did you watch a little bit of the draft, or do you just kind of see the results?
I had the draft on for most of the weekend. Was working for the most part, trying to chip away at those team profiles. Which making a lot of progress, gave you guys the look at sort of the working document, very rough around the edges, not anywhere close, unfortunately, to publishing them yet. We're still a few weeks away from that, but, it's one of those things where it's, you just kind of have to chip away. And then it all kind of comes together really quickly, in the final days. So, trying to work on those, but had the draft on. It's weird. I mean, we talk about it every year, how once guys get drafted, and it seems like it's happening more, you know, quickly every year, where they just kind of leave my brain. Like, you know, we're talking first round picks, guys that we've been talking about for 4 or 5 years. And as soon as they get drafted, it's just like, wait, who is that? What are they? Oh, yeah, okay. And it's just, I don't know, it's a weird thing. I should pay more attention, but definitely love the draft, did have it on, but my attention was certainly divided.
Xavier and I spent a lot of time together since Thursday, so some would say too much time together. But we had a great time covering the NFL draft. It was a lot of fun, and I got my rankings up and all that stuff. Still working on my IDP rankings, but got the immediate takes afterwards. Nick and I were talking about what was Green Bay doing drafting Sean Clifford, but Nick said, hey, you know, he's probably liked by his coaches. He's liked in the locker room. So there's some positivity about that. And then, I mean, still the one that I didn't understand was Trey Tucker getting drafted before his teammate, Tyler Scott. And of course it was the Raiders, and the Niners drafted a kicker like two spots ahead of him. I feel like I would rather have the kicker, but I guess maybe I'm knocking on Trey Tucker a little bit too hard.
Yeah. To say that you would take Jake Moody over him is definitely
Well, I expected Jake Moody to get drafted. I did not expect Trey Tucker to get drafted. Like, I knew a Moody would go in like the sixth or seventh. I didn't think he'd go in the third. I didn't think he'd be able to wear the number of which he got drafted, right? Like, I think he was 99 in the draft. I didn't have that for any kicker in ever. So that was kind of crazy. But we had a lot of fun covering the draft over for In This League.
We all have a shared rooting interest now.
For what?
As Falcons fans and Bijan Robinson. That's right. You know, I can't say whether or not, you know, more intense or in tune Falcons fans were super happy about it, but I was happy.
I was happy. Went to, you know, the biggest run first offense in the NFL here.
Right.
And I don't know. I know Xavier likes Bijan, but he also doesn't like putting out fires on Falcons Twitter And that's pretty much what he had to do and is still probably doing to this day. Xavier, you look stressed out about it. You doing okay?
If anybody could take over my Twitter for the next week to answer all these questions about how Bijan's going to work in this offense, why they took a running back in the top 10, and the overall offensive plan for the Atlanta Falcons, you can be my guest. I have had to answer more questions, pull more analytics than Nick has in the last 24 hours, 48 hours combined. It has been interesting, to say the least.
Yeah.
I'd help you if I could, but I literally know nothing about the
NFL. So. They're dead. They're dead to him. All the prospects are dead to him. They're in the NFL. They're gone from college football. I'll
in
see
my
you
opinion,
on Sundays.
Give him the football and let him run. That's
yeah. Yeah, man, great coaching.
That's where I am.
That's some solid coaching right there, especially hey, you know, if you have Bijan.
That's why they pay me the big bucks. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. But let's talk about some transfers here before we get into tight end rankings and some team previews here. Monday, Michigan State quarterback Peyton Thorne and top receiver Keon Coleman entered the transfer portal. Cornerback Charles Brantley joined them but withdrew from the portal on Tuesday. Thorne threw for 2,679 yards and 19 touchdowns with 11 picks in 2022. Coleman led the Spartans with 58 receptions, 798 yards, and 7 touchdowns on 88 targets, outproducing second-round pick Jaden Reed, who went to the Packers. So a big move there. Former Nebraska and Texas quarterback Casey Thompson is back in the transfer portal. Thompson, like Thorne, is expected to receive P5 interest, with Auburn reportedly among the suitors. Hayden Wolfe, the multi-year starting quarterback at Old Dominion, initially connected to multiple P5 programs after entering the portal last month, committed to Western Michigan on Tuesday. Last week, Louisville added defensive backs Storm Duck and Marcus Washington. Duck previously started in North Carolina, transferred to Penn State, but left after spring practice. And Washington was a highly rated Georgia recruit in the 2022 class. New Cards head coach Brian Brohm also brought in one of his former Purdue offensive linemen, Eric Miller, who started all 14 games for the Boilermakers last year and has 27 career starts. Miller is the fifth offensive lineman transfer to commit to Louisville this season. Brohm's old team added an intriguing piece to its roster Tuesday with the addition of former Marshall wideout Corey Gamage. Gamage left the Thundering Herd with 774 yards and 6 touchdowns in previously committed to Memphis in the winter in the transfer window, but on to Louisville he goes. There was big news Friday with the that could shake up the CFF rankings here, Nick. UTSA wideout Zachary Franklin entered the transfer portal. Franklin caught was targeted 131 times last season, caught 94 passes, 1,136 yards, and 15 touchdowns. He was Frank Harris's number one target. So bad for him and bad for UTSA. Someone's going to pick up a great one, though. So interesting to see where he goes. Saturday was a rough day for North Texas. His big play receiver Jair Shorter and productive linebacker Larry Nixon III entered the transfer portal. Shorter averaged 27.3 yards per catch, and 11 of his 23 receptions were for touchdowns in 2023. Nixon tallied 105 tackles for the Mean Green. Notre Dame had a three-headed rushing attack in 2023, lined up with Audric Estime, Logan Diggs, and Chris Tyree, all receiving at least 100 carries, but Tyree committed to receiver this spring, and Diggs entered the transfer portal. Is it Estime? How do I say it, Nick? Estime? I'm not sure how to say it.
I think it's Estime, but I could be
Estime.
Wrong.
Estime, who ran for 920 yards and 11 touchdowns, will be joined by Jadarian Price, who returns from a season-long injury. Diggs had been linked to LSU as a possible move. Former teammate Lorenzo Styles, who transitioned from wide receiver to DB this spring, has committed to Ohio State. Styles' brother, Sonny, is a defensive back for the Buckeyes. Ohio State also earned a commitment from offensive lineman Josh Simmons, who started every game at right tackle as a redshirt freshman for San Diego State last season. So these are the big moves, Nick. What do you think about what has been going on here?
Well, I mean, at the top, you mentioned some experienced quarterbacks, and there are still a few teams that are in the market for one. Hayden Wolfe, you know, Old Dominion, we've talked about before, pretty excited about what that offense is going to look like. Although, you know, I certainly know that there are some folks who don't necessarily think that Wolfe is all that good at quarterback, but when he entered the transfer portal, I mean, Florida and Auburn and you know, other teams that don't seem to have that position settled quite yet, were sort of the first ones that came out and thought, man, there's, you know, maybe things might get a little bit desperate. Obviously, Wolft ended up making a different move. Western Michigan, much, much different situation. Actually, a team that we'll probably be talking about fairly on in our previews. Don't really expect very much from Western Michigan this year, though. You know, perhaps he will help with that. But now we're seeing some bigger names, some guys with Power Five experience, not necessarily, you know, slam dunk answers to your quarterback questions if you're a team like Auburn or Florida. But Peyton Thorne's been a multi-year starter. You know, 2021 was better than 2022. Threw for, you know, over 3,000 yards. Michigan State had a pretty big year. Last year came down a bit, but a guy who's been, you know, started 20 plus games at the Power Five level and has won some. He will be, you know, he'll probably have some options. Casey Thompson, I believe, has visited Auburn already. But those two, right now, it seems, might be the most in-demand experienced starters at the Power Five level. Both, of course, you know, not perfect, but a team that needs to solidify that position, at least hand it over to a veteran, experienced player. You could probably do worse, but I know that Keon Coleman, you know, a lot of interest. He really could be one of the better receivers, maybe in the country. I know that there was some, you know, whisper that he and Thorne weren't connected in this. The news broke, you know, pretty close to simultaneously that they were entering the transfer portal, but there were some, you know, rumors or whispers that Coleman thought that Thorne would damage his draft prospects, which, as you mentioned, you know, Reed was a top 50 pick. So he seemed to do, you know, pretty well with Peyton Thorne throwing him the football the last couple of years. But Coleman, you know, might be a target for your conference championship type teams, maybe playoff contending type teams that really could use that one missing piece to help them, you know, take that next step. He, I think, is that kind of player. And it was really striking seeing when your starting quarterback, your most productive receiver, and then for about 24 hours when Brantley went in the transfer portal, who's one of their most productive defensive backs, when we removed all three of them from the Michigan State team page in our returning production database, Michigan State went from right around the top 25 nationally and one of the top three most experienced in the Big Ten to triple digits. And I think they're 13th out of 14 Big Ten teams now in returning production. And even adding Brantley back into the mix, they moved up from like 124 or whatever it was to like 102 or 104. So those three players are a big, big piece of the production puzzle for Michigan State last year, and they'll be missed. They'll be difficult to replace. I've been pretty impressed with Louisville, the things that they've done. Not necessarily the biggest names, but they are going out and picking up, you know, pieces to fill holes and to add depth. You know, Storm Duck left Penn State because it seemed like he was not going to be one of the starting corners there. He may or may not start at Louisville. I mean, they, you know, starting on one of the worst pass defenses in the country at North Carolina the last couple of years doesn't necessarily guarantee you playing time elsewhere. But, you know, Louisville brought him in, brought in his former teammate Cameron Kelly, brought in other defensive backs. You mentioned they brought in five offensive linemen, several of them, you know, quite experienced. Eric Miller knows, you know, Brian Brohm, knows the offense, and has played a lot of, you know, football at the Big Ten level, multi-year starter. So I feel like Louisville, you know, may not reach that sort of upper echelon of the ACC this year, but I think they're building a pretty solid foundation. I've been pretty impressed with the sort of methodical and deliberate moves that they're making in the transfer portal. I think they're making some really smart moves. They're not just throwing darts, it seems like some other teams may be out there. But other guys you mentioned, you know, some productive big play guys. I would think that, you know, Diggs is got the talent to play at a place like LSU. You know, maybe he's one of those missing puzzle type players. Like I mentioned with Keon Coleman, LSU could use a little bit more at that position if you know, they're going to make a real run at the SEC or maybe even a playoff spot. Perhaps Logan Diggs could be that missing piece. And it also opens up, you know, an opportunity for Audric Estime, who's a big back who can carry a heavy workload. Have to think that he's going to have an opportunity to do that, especially with Tyree playing more receiver and with Price coming off the injury. What was a really deep running back room is now a position perhaps where you're going to have to lean pretty heavily on one guy. And, you know, the group of five receivers you mentioned, Shorter and Franklin, I'm really, really intrigued with where they go. I mean, Franklin had just an absolutely huge year. We talked about him last week as being one of those, you know, second tier wide receivers in CFF. And that was with two other really productive receivers returning. It could go one of two ways. If he makes a move up to the Power Five, sometimes that transition is not particularly smooth. And doesn't necessarily set up a receiver to, you know, step right in and become the, you know, go-to guy. That's going to be a tough situation if he does try to, you know, move up to a Power Five program that's got more, you know, raw talent on the roster. But, you know, he has obviously been productive and just has had a huge career and just a gigantic 2022 season. So I don't doubt that he could play, but you know, he was in line to have statistically, you would expect one of the best possible seasons for a wide receiver this year. And so now, you know, there's some question marks depending on where he ends up, but Shorter, really, really interesting case because he's been hurt. He's been, you know, in and out of the lineup a little bit. But when he's there, I mean, big plays, you know, 27 yards per catch last year. And nearly he had double digit touchdowns. Nearly half of his receptions were touchdowns. That's just, you know, pretty crazy. So it'll be intriguing to see if he also, you know, tries to make a move into a Power Five type situation, or if this was just, you know, for whatever reason, North Texas wasn't the place he wanted to be anymore, and you know, maybe he makes a what some might call a lateral move. I'm really intrigued to see where those two guys go, and if they do, you know, try to take that next step in, you know, strength of schedule and quality competition, maybe with their future draft status in mind. Really, really kind of curious to see how that plays out for guys like that, because it's, you know, it's not always easy.
Xavier, your thoughts on some of these moves? Lots and lots of moves here. Obviously, you know, we had the short window for the portal, but I mean, like Nick said, Michigan State just got ripped apart. North Texas lost some big pieces. So your thoughts on the most recent movement in the portal here?
Now, Nick, remind me, when does the portal end again?
So it is now closed. It closed on Sunday for players to enter.
Okay.
However, it could take, it was like 48 or maybe 72 hours for some of that paperwork to go through. So it's possible we might hear, you know, a name or two. That's why some names have been sort of trickling out the last couple of days. But for the most part, unless there's one, you know, any minute now, we're probably at an end for players entering the portal. I think if they're not graduates could be a little bit different. Not sure. But guys can commit and sign. I'm not sure when the end date, if there is one for that.
Okay, cool. I mean, Scott, it's funny enough. We were, if you caught any of the broadcasts of our draft, we had a conversation about Peyton Thorne. CK actually tagged me when he decided to transfer after I gave him a raving review about his play at Michigan State, and more importantly, his play with Jaden Reed, as to why I like Jaden Reed. But a friend of mine and I had a discussion today about the kind of the quarterback room as far as the portal is concerned. He's a Florida fan, not necessarily a big fan of Mertz. And realistically, we kind of looked down the list, and the list right now, as many names as there are in there, outside of maybe Peyton Thorne, Casey Thompson, you're really the room is thin. The room is thin. There's a lot of teams that could absolutely use a veteran quarterback with some juice left in the left in the tank. So I think Peyton Thorne will absolutely land on his feet wherever he ends up. Same thing goes for Casey Thompson. I mean, the athleticism is there. He just hasn't necessarily been able to get through. He hasn't necessarily been able to produce in the other ways, but the athleticism is there, which is why I love the Auburn interest. He will absolutely duke it out with Robbie Ashford to see which one is the better quarterback, not just a better athlete. So I like that for Casey Thompson. I love Louisville adding Storm Duck and Marcus Washington. Louisville, once again, dips into the University of Georgia for another defensive back. Shout out to Josh Harvey Clemens. And goes out and gets another one of our higher prospects. And so I love that for him. A similar system as far as how they run their corners, right? Very man heavy, making sure that, he makes the correct decision, not just from a school perspective, but also from a scheme perspective. Same thing goes for Storm Duck. Same, much more man heavy team. And once again, he even stays within conference. Goes back into the ACC. So I like that for him. Zachary Franklin. I got a team I really want him to go to just for CFF purposes. And we kind of talked about this last week, but I would love to see him go to LSU. I think him and Neighbors would be one of the best, if not the best, tandem in college football.
For CFF, he'd be better sticking at UTSA, with those 15 touchdowns.
For him, I would love to see him at LSU, giving Jaden Daniels the opportunity to really sling it this year with a team that has lost a lot of production on their run game. And I think it's going to lean more on Jaden Daniels this year than they did last. I would love to see him at there. I think that combination would be deadly. So it would be great for everybody, but teams who have to play them. Hopefully Georgia does not. I think that would be great. He's also a Texas kid, had very few offers coming out. So I think you'll see him want to stay in and around there as a grad transfer, probably not have his family go too far away. He's from Cedar Hill, which I think, and maybe Scott can tell me, our relative Texas guy, can tell me what suburb that's in. But
too many suburbs in Texas. I don't know.
I would really love to see him go to the P5 and give him a real shot to be one of the top first three or four receivers taken in this year's draft. Being 6'1", 185, he's got the size, so it won't be the problem there. It's just whether or not he can do the production at the P5 level. Let's see. All right, and I really am concerned at this point about TJ Finley, to be perfectly honest with you.
Let's get to that, because there's a whole dose that we haven't got to yet of more moves. I mean, it was – we knew it was going to be a big week of transfers here. Colorado tackle Jake Wiley is headed to UCLA, and Texas A&M center Matthew Wyckoff committed to Cal. The Bears also received a commitment from NC State transfer Ben Finley and Mississippi State wide receiver Marquez Dortch. Former Cincinnati linebacker Jaheim Thomas committed to Arkansas, but the Razorbacks lost a previous commitment from North Texas tight end Varkey Gums. Now, under the radar linebacker who could make an impact at the P5 level, App State linebacker Jalen McLeod has announced his transfer to Auburn. McLeod has 8.5 tackles for loss and 6 sacks for the Mountaineers last year. Auburn quarterback TJ Finley, who has started for the Tigers, both at Auburn and LSU, is in the portal again. So we'll see where he ends up. Tyron Smith, who transferred to Texas A&M from UTEP after accounting for 1,039 yards and 7 touchdowns on 71 catches, has left the Aggies. Smith was reportedly weighing a return to the minors this spring, so we'll see if he ends up going back. As always, Colorado was busy. Tight end Sadu Touré re-entered the portal. Linebacker Aubrey Smith transferred to Houston, and the Buffs added FSU defensive back Marion Cooper and Washington edge Savelle Smalls. Cooper's former Florida State teammate Joshua Farmer, who we mentioned last week, withdrew from the portal to return to the Seminoles. A couple of intriguing receivers, BYU's Cody Epps and Purdue's Milton Wright, announced their intentions to transfer. Epps missed time last season to injury, and Wright was academically ineligible. But BYU added a transfer to the mix with Tuesday's commitment from Eastern Michigan wide receiver Darius Lassiter. Syracuse QB Justin Lamson will transfer after starring in the spring of 2022. Lamson did not play due to injury. Charlotte quarterback Xavier Williams, who was forced into starting duty as a true freshman in 2022 and expected to compete for the job this year, will instead transfer. Miami landed a commitment from Oklahoma cornerback Jaden Davis as the Hurricanes continue to remake their secondary. Florida also boosted the depth of its DB group with the addition of former Michigan starter R.J. Moten on Tuesday. One of the hottest names in the portal right now is Trey Amos, a defensive back from Louisiana. Amos has received offers from Alabama and Michigan, among others, since entering the transfer portal on Monday. There are rumors that both Ben Bryant, former Cincinnati and EMU quarterback, and A.J. Henning could be headed to Northwestern. And in non-transfer news, Oregon headlined a small group of spring games over the weekend. San Jose State will be the final FBS program to wrap up its spring this week. So lots of moves. I'm catching my breath now after all of that stuff. And I didn't even have to make this sheet up. Way more difficult for you, Nick, but lots of
I think my spelling's bad enough that didn't make it easy on you all the time. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there are many, many, many more
these are the entries headliners
that we are making in our team profiles. You know, the 2023 sheets are under construction as well, as we've mentioned. So having to put all these in there as well. And yeah, I'm ready for the portal to close, but it's very interesting because, you know, a team that we'll be talking about a little later on, one of our, you know, first teams we're previewing, Colorado, certainly has made things interesting. And, you know, Jake Wiley's one of the players that obviously is good enough to continue to play in the Pac-12 and the Power 5 level. You know, UCLA scooped him up pretty quickly and he had interest from other, fairly big name programs as well. So the moves that are being made in Boulder, there certainly are, some players who weren't really expected to contribute may or may not get an opportunity to, you know, stay even at the FBS level, let alone the Power 5 level. But there are a few here and there, like Wiley, who are going to, you know, play some big time football next year. I think that we could pencil Wiley into maybe the starting right tackle spot at UCLA. I mean, he certainly won't just get it by default, but there's room at UCLA. They certainly could use a player like him who's experienced and, you know, has played well at times. So Jaheim Thomas is somebody who intrigues me, Cincinnati linebacker going to Arkansas. Arkansas also is a team that intrigues me. They are kind of the next group up of teams that I'll be working on their team sheets. Really intrigued to see where they end up in our power rankings. They're always kind of a tweener, you know, a pretty solid top 25, maybe top 20 team, just as far as overall team strength goes. But, you know, play such a difficult schedule and then don't necessarily have the depth of some of the other major powers in the SEC and the SEC West specifically. So it'll be interesting to see where they stack up. Also, you know, kind of on that note, you mentioned Jalen McLeod leaving Appalachian State. I have done the Appalachian State sheet and we're probably going to be a little surprised when we see that number next to their name. As far as our power rankings, they don't look great on paper, to be quite honest. And losing McLeod is, pretty big loss. He was productive and I expect he will play and produce at Auburn. So a lot of moving parts, you know, a few key defensive players in this update, as you mentioned. I am really intrigued to see where Trey Amos ends up. Saw him enter the transfer portal and just happened to kind of look, you know, the name didn't resonate with me immediately, but looked at his entry in our Louisiana team profiles and was like, oh wow, yeah, he had a really productive year last year. Oh, and he's I bet he's going to have a lot of interest. And then almost immediately was like Alabama offers and today Michigan, Arkansas. I mean, there's he's going to have a long list. He's going to have, a pick of some really, really, big time offers to choose from. So there are certainly some impact players who are moving. There are a lot of, you know, people on the fringes who were, you know, maybe losing their scholarship or getting squeezed out of a job, or you know, bring in somebody else means that they move down one more rung on the depth chart. But there are some players who are going to be, you know, playing some big games and, you know, playing a lot of snaps next year as well. Just maybe not quite as many in this window as we saw in the winter opening window.
Javier, what do you think of some of these other moves? And like Nick said, I mean, this is like the tip of the iceberg as far as all these moves go. These are the real headliners here.
Right, exactly. And that only sniffs the, you know, what all the people who enter the transfer portal. That's kind of crazy to think about. But I love Ben Finley going to Cal. I think this is huge for him. I think this is a guy who, unfortunately, I mean, showed promise. I mean, showed at least, you know, he had something in the tank while at NC State, and I just think he was phased out a bit. You know, I think realistically he's going to go to a Cal team who's, I mean, Scott, you know firsthand, you paid to watch them play. It has had a dearth at the quarterback position for a while now. And I think, you know, in the event that they could actually find quarterback play, consistent quarterback play, which is something we've been clamoring for Cal for maybe half a decade now, they're a team that, you know, has put together relatively decent teams to say had quarterback play. Just call it what it is, right? I don't know how many times on this podcast we've talked about Cal having a solid defense, and the offense has been just pedestrian, right? Just not been great.
They haven't had a quarterback since Aaron Rodgers.
Exactly. And I think that that's been a huge issue. I think right now, what you're looking at is a guy who has promise at the very least, and has shown it, which is extremely important as well. As far as obviously Jaheim Thomas is going to Arkansas is huge. That's a team that last year defensively just wasn't great. I mean, we talked about Arkansas last year, you know, kind of being somewhat of just being pretty porous defensively, especially with an offense that had as much ball control ability as theirs did with the running game with KJ Jefferson and obviously Raheem Sanders. You would think that they were able to, you know, keep teams at bay as far as their points are concerned. Not the case at all. That game against Alabama was literally a track meet. So any more defensive help for them is always great. Same thing goes for Auburn as far as getting McLeon. You know, that's huge for them. The Auburn's defense, once again, is going to be, you know, needs it. They lost a big guy with Owen Popo going to the draft. You know, he's somebody who they absolutely need from top to bottom to replace that gap. And they've been a team that, you know, has lost, you know, a lot of very important talent for them. Maybe not hugely important talent as far as the draft is concerned, but they also lost Derek Hall, which was one of their edge rushers this year. So, once again, losing more talent, you've got to be able to replenish that if you're a team like Auburn who hasn't been able to necessarily recruit at the highest of levels, you know, in comparison to the SEC, maybe not compared to the rest of the country. Now to get to the sad part, TJ Finley. We got to get some momentum, kid. We got to get some momentum. It's extremely important that he finds his footing wherever he goes. I think he's going to have to go to the P5 level if he's going to really see starting minutes and starting time, because ultimately this is a guy who has not been able to get it at the P5 level. And the really sad part for me is he's lost his – I don't even say lost his job, but just hasn't been able to stick at schools who haven't had the greatest of quarterback situations, right? Like Jayden Daniels wasn't at LSU yet. Before when he first transferred to Auburn,
and he beat out Max Johnson, right?
Right, yeah. You know, who now is a third stringer at A&M, right? So like, it hasn't been a great situation for him. And then you look at, you know, Robbie Ashford. I'm sorry, you know, no shade, but 100% shade to Robbie Ashford. I'm not scared in my boots when Robbie Ashford comes to town. I'm just sorry, it's just not what it's not how I feel. It's unfortunate that he hasn't been able to necessarily beat out guys who I think personally he maybe feels like he's better than. But I was there. I was there when he beat Georgia State after Bo Nix got booed off of the field. And I remember leaving that game and just talking to a couple of Auburn fans. And they were like – and essentially they put it like this. Thank you, TJ, for winning us this game, but don't think that you have the job now. And at that point I was like, yeah, it just might not be his place to be. And he's tried to stick it out, and I give him kudos for, you know, competing, you know, when, you know, everybody complains that enough kids don't compete anymore, but for sticking around and competing. But it might be time to go to the G5 level and just play football, man. At the end of the day, you're there to, you want to play football. I understand that you want to do at the highest level, but right now it just hasn't panned out for you. Let's see. Where does Trey Amos go is really interesting for me. Alabama needs him bad, like really bad. That secondary not only lost people this year, but was already pretty underwhelming as is. And I think that that's really what the concerning part for them is. And so to bring in a guy like Trey Amos would be huge. They already lost DeMarco Hellum. Jordan Battle also went to the draft. Brian Branch went to the draft. So you're talking about a younger secondary at that. But then on top of that, you're talking about a secondary that probably needs a little bit of retooling, right? They also lost Eli Ricks. So you're talking about a secondary that needs a little bit of an uptick in talent. Because when you look at the talent on hand, it's really Kool-Aid McKinstry, and nobody else really comes to mind right away. And that has just not been a thing at Alabama for a while now. So him going to Alabama would be big. Obviously, him replacing DJ Turner at Michigan would also be huge. But I think Alabama really needs him right now. And so for them to get him, as he's been, he's also received an offer, would be huge for them.
Lots of moving. And luckily for Nick, the window is closed for leaving. But for moving, if you're already in there, these guys can still move around. So you're muted, Mike. Your mic is muted, Nick.
I was trying to pick on Xavier a little bit for getting Terrion Arnold and Malachi Moore. But I do agree. Alabama, it would not surprise me if Amos ends up there, because otherwise, outside of McKinstry, Arnold and Moore, probably pretty likely that they start a true freshman, an excellent true freshman in Caleb Downs. But Amos would definitely help. for sure.
Yeah, I mean, lots of moving pieces still, and where is Gums gonna end up? So lots of moving pieces here. But speaking of tight ends, let's talk about some of these tight ends for CFF. And I know in the last show I kind of said it's Brock Bowers and everybody else.
It is,
but it kind of is, Nick. I mean, it's Brock Bowers is the number one tight end pick by a wide margin. I think you have a couple of good guys in here with Keithy, who's been at Utah for a while, was supposed to be better than Kincaid. And obviously Kincaid just got drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. Jatavion Sanders has already been mocked in the first round of the 2024 mocks that are too fast that came out, 3 days after the draft, as we're sitting here. I've seen him mocked in the first round a couple spots. So, there is definitely other talent outside of Brock Bowers, but it's Brock Bowers by a mile, and then pretty much everybody else as it stands right now. Right, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely in a tier by himself from a CFF standpoint. I mean, obviously incredibly productive as a receiver, where he gets most of his points, nearly 1,000 yards in 15 games. So, stretched out beyond the typical CFF season, which only goes through the regular season. But raw numbers at the end of the year, 7 touchdowns, 942 yards. Also gets a handful of carries and scored 3 touchdowns. So somebody who, is a big part of the offense, not just as an occasional pass catcher, but a pretty, pretty consistently a top target in that Georgia offense. And I would expect for that to continue. From there and Bowers, depending on your scoring, might go in the second round, third round, if it's more of a traditional format. If it's a tight end premium league, he might be the first overall pick. He has been in a few that I've been involved in early in the off season. But, from there, there's a little bit of a gap. In a traditional format, Brant Keithy or Jatavion Sanders. There have been a few times I've seen Sanders taken ahead of Keithy, but you're not really going to see those guys selected until maybe the fourth, fifth round on the early side, and more likely, 6, 7, 8, something like that. So Bowers in almost any format is going to be gone by the third round. And then you could wait a little bit for, you know, maybe what most would expect to be that second best guy, whether it's Keithy, who, similar to Bowers, does, you know, resemble a little bit more of a wide receiver at times than a tight end, does get involved, didn't last year, but because of the injury, but in the past has gotten some carries, has gotten used down by, you know, the goal line in some unique ways. So that adds a little value to your tight end position as well. But, you know, those three guys, pretty clear, you know, tier one, Bowers, tier two, Keithy Sanders. And then from there, like a lot of positions that we've talked about this year, kind of a little bit of a mass, you know, group where it's really sort of up for discussion and your interpretation and your preference as to who you might take fourth through maybe 16. I mean, it's a pretty it's a pretty big, you know, third tier in my opinion.
Xavier, I mean, we know it's Bowers at the top, super right. talented. I mean, you know, we didn't get to see Darnell Washington catch many balls because why would you throw to Washington when Brock Bowers is wide open? Same yeah. position, obviously different types of players, but same position. Who would you take between Keithy and Sanders second for fantasy purposes?
Keithy, absolutely. I don't even think it's all that difficult the because of the people that are around each player, right? When I'm talking about Sanders, I'm also having to talk about the fact that they have Xavier Worthy and they got one of the best running back in, you know, out of high school as well. So he's going to get some touches and take it away from him. You know, Cam Rising got the ball to Dalton Kincaid like it was going out of style, right? Like Dalton Kincaid could probably tell you, you know, every stitching on the football. That's how much he got the ball last year. So I think you see similar treatment with Brent Keithy this year. He was injured last year, which is why you didn't see him all that much. But they're going to have to lean on him a ton for that passing offense, just like they did with Dalton Kincaid in a similar matter. So I think when you look at it, Keithy's got to be the guy that I'm taking there. He's just going to get a ton of targets. And as long as he can stay healthy, that offense is really going to revolve around him and Cam Rising, as well as a running game that, you know, isn't to slouch over at all. But yeah, I don't see why not at this point.
So when we look at the next group, let's go down to, you said 16, right, Nick? That's kind of,
I mean, group. 20, maybe, you know, it's a sure. big third tier.
We'll go down to 12 to start. So it's after Jatavion Sanders, we got Jalen Conyers, Bryson Nesbitt from North Carolina. Conyers is from Arizona State. Cade Priestcorn from Ole Miss. Corey Dykes from Maryland. Ben Yerchek from Stanford. Luke Leitchie from Iowa. Brady Hunt from Ball State. RJ Maryland from SMU. And Jaheim Bell from Florida State. Round out your tight end ones. Is this... this is a pretty typical, you know, tight end one group. Do you have some surprises in here versus what you've seen happen in drafts, Nick?
Not too many. I don't think I really, you know, went on any major limbs with the possible exception of Bryson Nesbitt. I'm maybe the world's biggest Bryson Nesbitt fan. folks who, you know, played CFF with me a couple of years ago or were involved in any discussions I had about CFF. Usually I'm not super opinionated on players, but in the tight end position, there's usually like one guy who just sort of like captures my heart. And a couple of years ago, it was Cole Turner from Nevada, and Bryson Nesbitt reminds me a lot of him, except that he's more athletic and just a better football player. So Nesbitt technically isn't the starting tight end at North Carolina, but I have him as a top five CFF tight end because basically he's just a big, you know, 6'5", 230 plus receiver who they move all around the offense, who has one of the best quarterbacks in the country throwing to him and has to replace a lot of receiving production. You know, losing guys like Josh Downs to the NFL and Green. And, you know, there's a lot of targets and catches up for grabs. And I believe Bryson Nesbitt's going to get a big chunk of those. And, you know, he really finished strong, had a great bowl game, is somebody who is a matchup, you know, problem in the red zone. And I believe that he's just in line for a really, really great season. So he might be, 7, 8, 9, 10 on a lot of people's lists. He might even be lower in some, but I will draft him often, have drafted him often, and am willing to state that, you know, firmly, I believe he'll be a top five CFF tight end and might even have, you know, a ceiling higher than that. Might be, if things go well for North Carolina, I could certainly see Bryson Nesbitt working his way into tier two. So comes with some risk, doesn't have, you know, a ton of production, but for a tight end, you know, does pretty well and really, really impressed just watching him play and the way that, you know, can definitely see him becoming one of the top producers in that North Carolina offense. So otherwise it's sort of just, you know, your preference. I've seen Jurecek go really early in some drafts, some of the tight end premium drafts. He's been, you know, the third guy off the board or fourth guy pretty consistently. There's some question as to whether or not the new Stanford coaching staff, the new offense they have there, is going to really utilize the tight end, you know, at the same level Stanford has in the past. Iowa is, you know, Luke Lachey certainly, I think, could put up the same type of numbers as I already forgot the guy who got drafted last.
Sam LaPorta. Yeah, Sam LaPorta. You already forgot his name.
Great player. I mean, forgot his name.
I forgot his Lachey. And I knew it was something weird too. I was like,
they're related. Maybe? He's related to Nick Lachey.
Is he really?
Yeah, I believe that's true. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know Sam LaPorta anymore, but I could tell you
that. Yeah. Nick Lachey. Yeah, you know the whole family tree of Nick Lachey. Yeah,
no
here.
Problem. I'll forget it this time next year when Luke Lachey goes to the NFL draft. But, you know, there's always a conversation in CFF circles about the system, the type of offense, and there are certainly system players. There's system quarterbacks, system receivers, da 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 da. Tight end, it's not. There's not really system tight ends, except for Iowa, you know, and you know Stanford maybe a little bit ago, but we saw last year Jurecek was really disappointing. Came in really, really highly rated. Highly ranked in CFF rankings and really came up short. But Iowa's been pretty consistent. And Lachey, you know, four touchdowns last year, nearly 400 yards in a part-time role. And so you expect that even though he will have to split some time with Eric All, who is another top 20 tight end, who I'm sure we'll, you know, touch on a little bit farther down the line. But, you know, he, I think is somebody who you could certainly, you know, if you're banking on past performance at the position in an offense that does utilize the tight end a little bit more than others, you know, he's going to be, in the mix as well. But, to your original question, Nesbitt's probably the one that I'm most different on. Everybody else, it seems these rankings, at least in the drafts I'm taking part in, are not too different than what we're seeing ADP-wise.
Xavier, in the top 12 here, do you see anyone that you really like, anyone you think is too low or too high?
I love Jaheim Bell. I absolutely love that kid. You know, now I think he came into the SEC doing too much. I think doing a little bit too much comparisons when he came into the SEC. They called him Kyle Pitts Jr. And I think,
why did they do that? I hate it when they do that. Yeah. It's like everyone wanted to call Dalton Kincaid Travis Kelce. Like, don't compare a player to the best ever at the position. That's ridiculous. Right. Elijah Cansey, because he went to Pitt and he's short, got Aaron Donald comps. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
It was unfair. Obviously, he didn't live up to that at first. But I really like the kid at Florida State now. I think, you know, Florida State's going to use him in the way that he wanted to be used. I think South Carolina he got fatigued at South Carolina.
Well,
I
know. Away from Rattler.
Yeah, I mean that, but also South Carolina.
I get fatigued with Rattler also.
if you look at his numbers, you realize he had more rush yards than he did receiving yards. He also had more rushing touchdowns than he had receiving touchdowns, right? Like, this is a kid who maybe was just underutilized, and when he was utilized, he was utilized incorrectly. So I think Jaheim Bell has a really good year this year. I mean, hell, out of the guys in the top 12, he has the least amount of snaps other than Brent Keithy, and Keithy was out for 8 games, 9 games if you got in the bowl game. So, like, I just think he's going to flourish in a team that needs pass catchers, right? We talked about this in the wide receiver episode, right? We talked about how much they need pass catchers outside of Wilson to stretch the field for Florida State, so they don't have to rely so much on having methodical drives. And I think Jaheim Bell checks it off the list. Another, sizable target that's going to give Jordan Travis a guy to look at consistently. I really like Jaheim Bell.
All right, let's go down to the tier two tight ends here, or really tight end two in a 12-man league. We have Tanner Koziol from Ball State, Mason Taylor from LSU, Mason Fairchild from Kansas, Jake Burningstall from Clemson, Ben Sinnott from Kansas State, Isaac Rex from BYU, Eric All from Iowa, Mitchell Evans from Notre Dame, Theo Johnson from Penn State, Trey Knox from South Carolina, Michael Trigg from Ole Miss, and Caden Stover from the Ohio State. Is there anyone here, Nick, that you feel queasy about putting up too high, or that you're like, man, I'm going to sneak this guy into the tight end twos because I really like him. I don't care what anybody else says.
The first point, Mitchell Evans probably is a little too high. Notre Dame, pretty far up there with Iowa as far as producing productive tight ends, year in and year out. So I usually at this position don't try to put too much on what others did in the past. Michael Mayer, pretty special tight end, right? Mitchell Evans, can't say that he's quite that level of player, but can't necessarily say that he isn't. He just hasn't had an opportunity yet to be a featured guy in the offense. So he might be a touch too high. I haven't really targeted him this year. One player that I have targeted, more to your second question, who I could be convinced to push him a little bit higher, maybe into that tight end one group, is Mason Taylor, LSU. Came in, started immediately as a true freshman. Comes from Hall of Fame bloodlines. And, LSU, Xavier was mentioning how, they really could use maybe another player, add to that wide receiver mix. Well, if they don't, happen to go that route, that might mean a few extra balls for Mason Taylor. And if they do, he's still somebody that should be a big part of that offense. So came up big, had the winning 2-point conversion catch in the win over Alabama. Didn't play like a true freshman. And I think that we haven't seen, maybe even the best of him yet. So I think that, it's not going to shock me one bit if we look up at the end of the year and Mason Taylor's a top 10 tight end and maybe well inside that top 10.
Javier, when you look beyond the top 24 here, is there someone down the list that you think, man, we need to get this guy on the list? Maybe it could be like where Varkey's Gums ends up, whoever. Is there anyone beyond this list that is missing that you feel like could be an egregious mistake by Nick and you want to point it out immediately?
I mean, I don't see why. I will say one that, he's not necessarily not on the list, but I just think that his role in the offense will grow as the year continues. But I think Caden Stover's a guy who could have a really good year for Ohio State. I think last year, not only was he playing injured pretty much the entire year, I mean, we all saw the J.J. Watt strap that he was donning the entire year. I think he's a guy who absolutely you could find in this tier two, in this list, and who knows? Like, here's the thing about having a new quarterback like Kyle McCord. He could fall in love with Marvin Harrison Jr., sure. But there's got to be another guy that he falls in love with. And it might end up being Caden Stover. Like, he could very well feel more, trusting in his tight end more so than he does in his wide receiver too. We see this with quarterbacks all the time. A new quarterback, you know, opens the door for your second guy to really come along and possibly make plays.
I will say, sorry to interrupt, but no, you hit on immediately the reason why he's where he is.
Right.
Is health. I mean, was hospitalized with a back injury during the playoff game against Georgia. So I, you know, if we get to the fall, if we hear that he's healthy and looking great, and yeah, absolutely. He will move up this list. You know, that's just a really scary injury report situation, which, right. you know, probably in most cases I'd have him even farther down because I wouldn't necessarily expect him to come back. But you know, if he does, I definitely agree. He's got the potential to be a big, big part of that offense.
And that's the old scouting trope, right? It's one of my favorites because it's true and it cuts to the core of everything you do. Yeah. Availability is the best ability.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean,
it's one of those. And you hate to say it after a guy got hurt, you know, in a playoff game and everything, but that it's a major concern. So,
and I don't mean to be mean about that. This other kid that I really want to see you take that next step, but hello to Austin Stogner. Come on. It's time.
I feel like Austin Stogner.
Yeah.
Is he 27 years old? How old is Austin Stogner?
Like he's been around football for seemingly about half a decade here. You know,
was he recruited by Mariucci, Nick? I mean, come on. How old is he?
This will be his sixth.
You're making a reference to the chat that wasn't part of the show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were talking about
Kyle Bowler.
I said Aaron Rodgers was the last good Cal quarterback. And Nick kind of, you know, did a face like, was he? And I was like, yeah, Kyle Bowler was before. Because I think he might have been the last Cal QB draft. I know Garbers is somewhere. I can't remember.
We keep interrupting Xavier.
Yeah. Sorry.
No. I love the private conversation. I was just letting you guys go. I was like, look, they're now talking into a bracket that I don't know, and that's 90s football. Have a good time, sir.
Yeah. There's some Steve Mariucci West Coast offense install videos floating around on YouTube. If you got a free 6 hours one day on a Sunday afternoon, just watch Steve Mariucci and what are those things called? The projector, you know, it's got like the light bulb, you know, a little transparency on there vis-a-vis marker.
Oh my god.
Stuff, man. Get the
you can tell it's
reminding me of algebra right now.
Right. Get the marker spray that you have to use incessantly just to make the thing clear.
Oh yeah, and you can tell that it's a copy of a copy of a copy of a VHS, right. So it's great quality.
There's only like four lines in every frame, so that's good.
God, it feels like I'm watching Jim Brown film. Like, yeah. You know, but no, I think that, you know, Austin Stogner, come on. Like, you transferred away to get the ball more. Like, we all know why you moved to Oklahoma. It was so that you could see the so you could see the football more. Like, you decided to move away from the SEC so that you weren't playing in what was considered a more pro-style offense where you weren't seeing the requisite touches. And you can't compete right now with the rest of the guys, with a lot of the guys above this on the higher on this list. And I just want him to succeed. When I saw him originally transfer to Oklahoma, I was like, this is going to be a great move. This is going to be, you know, Dylan Gabriel's best buddy. And so I'm really hoping that he can turn into at least some of what I thought he could look like, because the kid is extremely talented, just like Jaheim Bell. I mean, once again, you had two South Carolina tight ends that just weren't used. They were just sitting there rotting away. To lack of a better term. And last but not least on this list is I just want to see Eric Gilbert play football. I have no expectations for the kid.
Yeah.
This is just an aside. Hopefully he's able to play football. You know, he had a drop pass. I watched the Nebraska film, spring game. He had a drop pass. I was like, is that Eric Gilbert? I don't care if he dropped it or not. He's on the field. Like,
he's on the field.
Yeah.
That's availability. That's skill number one.
Well, I think he needs a waiver, unfortunately. I don't know that he's gotten one yet. So we'll see how that plays out.
He played in the spring game, so I'm assuming that he's good.
So I don't think it's settled yet. We'll have to see.
Well, hopefully he can get that waiver, because I just want to see the kid play football. You know, he grew up 30 minutes away from me in Marietta. Kid was extremely talented coming out of high school. Obviously, he was the number one tight end in the country that year. I just want to see him play football. It's been such a long time since we've seen him do anything outside of a spring game. You know, last year in Georgia's spring game, he caught a touchdown as well.
Great.
He looked great. And it just didn't hit. And so now in Nebraska, new regime under Matt Rhule, you know, in the event that he can even give them some type of production, just see what the player that we all saw coming out of high school, I think somebody would still kick the tires on this kid to draft him, genuinely speaking. I mean, the physical traits are there. He just hasn't been able to get it in between the years and been able to stay on the field and with the teams that he's with. So I just want to see the kid play football.
Yeah, I agree. Last thing for me on this guy who's 34th in these rankings, who I'm really, really tempted to push into the top 20, Colson Loveland, Michigan.
Mm.
Big time talent. Saw what he could do in the semifinal game against TCU. Expect he'll be a big part of that offense. I feel like I'm probably a good bit too low on Loveland at 34. He probably should be top 25, maybe top 20. I mean, he's really, really good. Excited to see what he can do.
With as much as they use the tight ends and as big of a hole as losing like Luke Schoonmaker is going to leave, I don't blame you there.
Michigan, where playmakers go to die.
Realistically.
So Jim Harbaugh's offense.
Well, see, the problem could be, you know, for the first six games, they might be up 50-0. Right. I mean, they're going to be blowing out people and just running the football.
Be a lot of Don. Be a lot of Don.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, we're going to have a short episode here going over the transfers and the tight ends. We're actually going to split up the team previews. We're going to make those their own show. So, you know, some people come just for the team previews. I know most of you are going to want to hear about the transfers and the tight end rankings as well. So we're going to split these up. So we're going to go ahead and end here with a show that's just over an hour. Can you guys believe it? We did it. We made it under an hour and a half on a CFP Winning Edge pod. But coming back, we're going to hit three teams, the three lowest teams in Nick's rankings, and bring you some team previews. So if you want to listen to that immediately after this one, you can, because they will both be going up at the same time here. But that will wrap it up for us. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Bogman Sports for myself, at CFP Winning Edge for Nick, at Xavier Trish for Xavier, T-R-I-C-H-E, Xavier underscore Trish, T-R-I-C-H-E on the Twitter for him. But we will see you guys in just a minute on the other show. Take it easy, everybody.
Thank you to our Patreon supporters for keeping our show ad-free and for funding our wide range of college football analytics projects. Thanks also to Blake Austin for our theme music. To learn more about CFB Winning Edge, visit patreon.com/CFB Winning Edge or follow us on Twitter @CFB Winning Edge.